Hello, Ivy here. This week's podcast is coming towards the end of our series now of looking at Responsible Technology Youth Power Fund and the 26 organisations that were granted funds. We have got three more episodes to go, including this one. So it's now 12 episodes and not 13. The reason for that is because this week's podcast and next week we'll be covering three non-profits in each of those episodes, and then the last one will be the last two. So, this week's podcast is looking at our subscription to addiction, public knowledge, and reboot, episode 114. Two out of the three non-profits this week are mainly video-based. By that I mean there are a number of videos have been made, video clips put together, talking about various elements of their projects and their progress. Yes, there is narrative there on the website, but for those that may well find it much more revealing to watch a video of a few minutes each time explaining, showing what they've done, who they've been talking to, who they've been working with. In many ways, it's better than just reading through a script. Although the script is there, the narrative is there for you to look at, but it's very short compared to the majority of the ones that I've been looking at so far. That being said, they have done the most in terms of providing video descriptions of what they're doing. And one of their videos, in fact, has won an award recently. It is one of the earlier slides in the podcast and also images in the article. And it states that our subscription to addiction is the winner of the Social Dilemma Impact Storyteller Award. It goes on to say, our subscription to addiction, a youth for youth documentary, sparking our generation's conversation about our experiences on social media. With grant funding and mentorship from LookUp and the production team behind Netflix's The Social Dilemma. There's another slide headed up Our Journey, and it states, our team consists of five college students, each of us struggling growing up on social media. We've banded together to create a film empowering our generation to be part of solving social media addiction. The synopsis of this short film is as follows. When a young filmmaker spirals down the addictive YouTube rabbit hole and hits rock bottom, she is determined to repair her relationship with her phone and reclaim her life by finding her voice in the digital well-being movement. Joining that digital well-being movement, the main character is inspired to publicise their activism and empower the rest of her generation to take back control of their time. There is another slide that says, we are not the only ones working towards digital wellness, and we are proud to share the organisations we've been working with to find solutions to social media addiction. In this list of organisations that are partners in this research, you will recognise some of the names, because some of those organisations are non-profits that we have looked at in recent weeks and who also have received grant funding from Responsible Tech Youth Power Fund. And as I've touched on before, it's quite clear how over these last few months, these various groups of young people have been talking to one another, and where they can share their own experiences and help another group, that's what has been happening, and vice versa. And in doing so, each of those groups are stronger for that activity and for that partnership. The first one listed is called Look Up, Look Up Live. Look Up is by Youth for Youth, social venture dedicated to helping young people thrive in the digital world. Second one is The Social Dilemma. The Social Dilemma is a documentary that features the voices of technologists, researchers, and activists working to align technology with the interests of humanity. Number three, you will have heard of, Design It For Us, a youth-led coalition advocating for safer social media and online platforms for kids, teens, and young adults. Number four is Half the Story, another group that we have covered. Half the Story's mission is to empower the next generation's relationship with social media through advocacy, education, and providing access to resources for youth. We believe in digital well-being. Number five, Fair Play, Childhood Beyond Brands. Fair Play Screen Time Action Network. Our Screen Time Action Network is a coalition of practitioners, educators, advocates, and parents working to promote a healthy childhood by reducing the amount of time kids spend with digital devices. This particular section ends with a statement by the organisation: if you are working on anything that is meant to create a future with more humane tech and would like to partner or collaborate with us, feel free to reach out to us on our contact page on the website. Our next organisation is Public Knowledge. Emerging Tech 2023. Emerging Tech brings together public interest advocates, policymakers, and companies to discuss the promise, pitfalls, and policy implications of cutting-edge technology. Public Knowledge hosts Emerging Tech to bring together public interest advocates, policymakers, and companies on the cutting edge of technology. The event helps inform policymakers about the promise, potential pitfalls, and policy implications of fast-moving tech-dominating headlines and impacting our society in new ways. We invite industry experts from across the country to join us for an all-day discussion, as well as a reception and tech showcase where guests can experience the latest technologies firsthand and get to know the people driving the next iteration of the internet. In 2023, the event focused on generative AI, XR technologies, and the decentralized web. Science fiction novelist, journalist, and technology activist Cory Doctorow keynoted the event. Doctorow recently released his book, Choke Point Capitalism, on how both big tech and big content captured creative labour markets and how we can win them back. Dr. Au proposed that the best way to stop the internet's long decline into five giant websites, each filled with screenshots of the other four, is to restore power to users. Dr. Au explained that doing so creates a web where we freely choose our online services from a wide menu and stay with them because we like them, not because we can't afford to leave. Learn more about this topic in his Electronic Frontier Foundation blog post. There is a link for that in the article and a link and more information on the website. There are three slides coming up, each depicting a different panel and panel members discussing a variety of topics. Panel one, Warring Worlds, Competition and Openness in XR. Each of those individuals are named and there are images. You can click on each of those on the website and find out information about each of those speakers. I have just included the screenshot of the panel and their names. In the article, their names and job titles have direct links, to the information on the website. So whether you go straight to the website or do it from the article, you will be able to find out far more detail about each panel member and their particular expertise, hence why they're on the panels that they're on. So panel one is Warring Worlds, Competition and Openness. Speakers from Unanimous AI, Mozilla, XR Association and Stanford University joined public knowledge moderator and competition policy director Charlotte Slayman in a conversation on Warring Worlds, Competition and Openness in XR. Panelists discussed the potentials, pitfalls and policies that lawmakers, innovators and consumer groups need to consider as they delve into the world of XR. You can watch the panel here. Once again, there is a direct link from the article and there's also a link on the website where you can hear and see all of that discussion of each of the three panels. That is just a little extract of what panel one we're discussing. Panel two comprises of four people and their topic is decentralizing the web stack. Can it fix some of our biggest problems? Speakers from Electronic Frontier Foundation, Fight for the Future and Harvard Kennedy School joined Internet Archive moderator and director of partnerships Wendy Hanamura in a conversation on decentralizing the web stack. Can it fix some of our biggest problems? Panelists discussed the capabilities of a decentralized web stack and challenges to large-scale, open-source digital networks. As in panel one, there is a link for you to watch the whole discussion at your leisure. It is also on the website. Panel three has five panel members discussing demystifying generative AI, understanding the technology to make better policy. Speakers from OpenAI, Seed AI, Aspen Digital, and Latham and Watkins joined public knowledge moderator and policy counsel Nicholas Garcia in a conversation on demystifying generative AI, understanding the tech to make better policy. Panelists discussed the fundamentals of this groundbreaking tech, as well as how we might regulate its powerful potential. And, as in the previous panels, you can click on the link and watch the whole of the discussion at your leisure. Multiple companies and organisations join the event to showcase some of the latest technology discussed in the panels. This showcase gives guests the opportunity to experience these emerging technologies directly, so they can begin grasping both the practical and policy potential of these devices and how they might impact our society. You can glimpse the tech showcase by another direct link. There are also a few slides that I've included in the podcast and in the article, and there are far, far more on the website showing you people trying out various pieces of equipment and talking about their thoughts on what they saw and experienced, of course. Earlier in the year, Public Knowledge were joined by Dope Nerds, a Baltimore-based small business that exhibited VR hardware that featured immersive edutainment experiences on the go, presented by founder Ursula Spencer. Google, which demonstrated its augmented reality AR application, Google Lens, that uses a mobile device's camera and computer vision to extend search to the world around you, as well as Bard, the company's generative AI assistant that operates similarly to OpenAI and ChatGPT. There was also a slide showing someone using that technology from Google. OpenAI creators were there too, of the popular ChatGPT, powered by a new GPT-4 model, which demonstrated its flagship tool driving much of the excitement around generative AI. Project Liberty, which featured a decentralized social media platform called MeWe, that uses a decentralized social networking protocol, DSNP, developed to power the new generation of decentralized social media applications, allowing users to easily communicate with each other. XR Association, in brackets XRA, which exhibited virtual reality hardware that enabled attendees to jump into immersive experiences, including the frenetic rhythm game Beat Saber, and even Meta's flagship VR social application, Horizon Worlds. Reach out to Michelle Ambadiang, our Events and Development Manager, to sponsor this event, join the panel discussions in the future, or participate in the Tech Showcase in 2024. To share your own world-changing technology. View our YouTube channel to experience more of this momentous event. That link is also included at the end of the article. Public Knowledge receives financial support for its mission from a wide array of sources to ensure that its funding remains diversified and its mission independent. Funding sources include some supporters who may disagree with our positions on various policies, as well as charitable foundation grants and general support contributions from generous individuals and companies. However, there are some values that are core to Public Knowledge's work, but not mentioned in our mission, such as equity for traditionally marginalised individuals and groups, and the importance of democratic institutions that preserve free expression and equal justice. Public Knowledge factors these values into its decisions on accepting support. Charitable foundations account for the majority of Public Knowledge's annual revenue. The remainder of support comes from corporate and individual donations, including sponsorship of the IP3 Awards. Public knowledge recognises individual donors and companies if they wish, through the IP3 Awards event materials. Public knowledge limits contributions from any single corporation to 10% of its annual budget to ensure that no funders can attempt to assert undue influence on public knowledge. PQ Trains is the next heading. PQ Trains is Public Knowledge's programme to develop diverse early career talent from all backgrounds with a learn-by-doing approach, working side-by-side with Public Knowledge's advocates in fellowship and internships. So, what is PK Trains? For almost a decade, Public Knowledge has been a leader in training diverse early career advocates for a future in public policy making, putting them in positions to have their voices included in the making of laws and regulations. Public Knowledge's training programme is an immersive experience where early career fellows learn by working side by side with Public Knowledge's lawyers and advocates in the halls of Congress, before agencies like the FCC, FTC and DOJ, in coalition meetings and with the press. Public Knowledge fellows have moved on to leadership positions at Common Cause, National Hispanic Media Coalition, elected office as a state senator, with federal agencies, including an FCC commissioner's office, Capitol Hill, and other policy institutions. The fellowship program is a driver of diversity in the tech policy field. 2/3 of the 22 fellows hired into Public Knowledge's program from 2013 to 2020 were female. Almost 2/3 were people of colour, and over 1/3 were from families where at least one parent was born outside of the US. At least 3 identified as LGBTQ. Learn more about PK Trains program in their brochure, and there is a link in the article and also on the website. Why does America need public interest advocates? Access to an open internet is critical to participation in a democratic society. Today, the public faces increasing challenges to fair and open access to the internet, from corporate consolidation and control to overbroad applications of copyright law and many other threats. The public needs to be represented in Washington to promote better policies in everyone's interest. That is why we are training a new group of smart and savvy public interest advocates to balance corporate power by forcefully representing the public for years to come. How does Public Knowledge train advocates? Public Knowledge trains public interest fellows with a learn-by-doing approach at our location in Washington, D.C. Graduate fellows are immersed in internet, communications and intellectual property policymaking. They take a leading role on an issue or issues, plan strategy, participate in educational meetings on Capitol Hill, agencies and with other public interest groups and allies, and engage with the public through press and social media. Fellowships culminate in an understanding and facility to advocate for the public interest that will position them to be leaders in the public interest community. Public Knowledge also hosts summer interns who assist on the same projects. What kind of mentoring and learning opportunities are provided to fellows? Fellows are provided with mentoring and substantive advice from two sources: the director of the fellowship programme and a staff advocate in the subject area where they are working. Each mentor meets with the fellow regularly to help develop projects and skills, balance priorities, and develop professionally. Public Knowledge hosts outside speakers to talk with the fellows, interns, and staff. We convene staff dialogues on emerging issues and how they relate to Public Knowledge's work and the public interest. In the article, there is a link to a short video which is about a member of staff of Public Knowledge who is no longer with us. And you will see colleagues talk about this member of staff and the work that he did in mentoring others, and also how he emerged through that programme. It's very moving. It's very inspirational. Yeah, it's a very, very good piece of video and gives a lot of information about the actual training. And you hear from people who are going through that training or who have just completed that training and their views on it. There's a slide showing a photo of that member of staff who is no longer with us. And as I said, you'll be moved by that, but there's also more information on the website. So the link to the video is in the article and on the website, and there's more information about this whole programme of training and where people are now and their feelings and views about this quality training programme. Let's move on to our third organisation, Reboot. Reboot is a publication and community reimagining techno-optimism for a better collective future. Technologists have long imagined their work in a vacuum. "Hurry up, it's time to build," they proclaim, moving fast and breaking plenty along the way. Rather than hacking away at half-baked solutions, we aim to redefine what success in tech means altogether. At Reboot, we believe technology is part of a system. We analyse tech in the context of the institutions and ideologies it shapes and is shaped by. Technologists should also be thinkers, writers, and advocates. Society thrives when we all have the courage to state the future we want to live in. Optimism is an action, not a belief. We're neither accelerationists nor Luddites. We are agents chipping away at a better world. To that end, here's what we are building. Newsletter. We share weekly essays and interviews by community members. Magazine. We publish Kernel, a biannual print magazine. Events. We host live Q&As with authors of the best books on tech and society. Community. We run a fellowship, in-person meetups, book clubs, and more. There are quite a few images on the slides and also in the article depicting some of those things that I've just read out. Goes on to say, Reboot was co-founded by Jasmine Sun and Jessica Dye in 2020. They currently serve as co-editors-in-chief. In addition, our editorial board comprises of Ashwin Ramaswani, Jacob Guperman, Hal Treidman, Humphrey Ubudabi, Lila Shroff, and Tianu Fang. We operate as a fiscally sponsored non-profit run by an ever-growing team of volunteers and supported by a community of thousands of students, educators, writers, engineers, historians, activists, and scientists. there are photographs of the editorial board, and there's a section where they are introducing 6 new members. Thrilled to introduce the 6 new people joining Reboot's editorial board. Many of them have already been involved in Reboot as community members and contributors, and all are thoughtful, brilliant and passionate people who I trust to broaden our coverage, deepen our rigour and expand our perspective with their work. I asked each editor to share a bit about themselves, plus a favourite piece of tech writing. Exciting bonus, everyone here is open for pitches. Ashwin Ramaswamy. Hi, I'm Ashwin. I'm from Johns Creek, GA, and I'm currently pursuing a JD degree at Georgetown Law. I come from a computer science background at Stanford. I love to learn about religion and Eastern philosophy and read science fiction. My work touches on topics including public interest technology, law and policy, digital humanities, cybersecurity and philanthropy, which I hope to cover. I also like thinking about open source software, communities and governance, power dynamics around big tech and AI, and what the history of ancient technologies, from writing to agriculture, can teach us about the development of technology today. I have just read Restricted Code, and it's fascinating. I like how it explains the real transformative potential of Sanskrit grammar in a clear way, but at the same time cuts through the AI Sanskrit hype and connects India's contemporary focus on AI Sanskrit to colonialism and other phenomena. Jacob Cooperman. Hi, I'm a writer, editor and ecologist based in Vancouver, British Columbia. In my day-to-day, I am an assistant editor and communications coordinator at the Long Now Foundation and the BIJOCSM organiser at If Not Now. In past lives, I've been a music critic, an advocate for fossil fuel divestment, and a master's student in environmental science. I also have 2 cats named Lila and Lanu, and will send a picture of them to anyone who emails me with a pitch. At Reboot, I aim to cover, and am interested in pitches on, the climate and our techno-social responses to it, the strange excesses of the online musical economy, unexpected fragments of tech history, and whatever else seems of interest. The Salt of the Cosmos from Tal Milovina is one of my favourite pieces of writing at the intersection of the environment and technology. It's dazzling both formally and conceptually, using lithium as a connecting thread. It draws lines between different parts of the digital experience, from the hypermaterial world of resource extraction to more nebulous, almost hallucinatory visions of decentralized communities and ghosts in the machine. Hal Triedman. Hi, I'm a technologist, writer, activist and musician based in Denver, Colorado. In my day job, I work as a senior privacy engineer at the Wikimedia Foundation. As a Reboot contributing editor, I hope to cover security, privacy, histories of technology, the political economy of the tech industry, and technological ideologies. I'm open for pitches on those topics and any others. I absolutely love the Quanta essay about June Hugh, the 2022 Fields medalist. I like a lot of things that Quanta produces, but this piece stands out to me because of the care that goes into showing Junhu not as a stratospheric genius, which he clearly is, but as a thoughtful, curious and humble thinker. I also love the way that it shows mathematics research as a messy process, full of roads not taken and unexpected ismorphisms rather than the sterile proofs that we often become acquainted with in maths class. Finally, and this is typical for quanta, I really love the graphical illustration explanation of the cutting edge of maths research. As a practice, it feels very respectful to the reader's intellect. Humphrey Obado. Obu Obi. My apologies if I pronounced that incorrectly. Hello there. I'm a designer, organizer and technologist based in San Francisco. For the past few years, I was running public data programs at a criminal justice non-profit called Recidives. Now I run Let Studio, a creative studio that supports democratic, community-led innovation in the Bay Area. I'll also be starting a Masters of Public Policy at UC Berkeley in the fall. For Reboot, I'll be convening hearts and minds around the idea of civic infrastructure, a term I use to describe the tools and spaces, both digital and physical, that communities use to coordinate social change. Nameless Feeling by Ludwig Wittgenstein is the kind of read that shocked me into paying attention to something that I never thought to challenge. The idea of vibes and the existential risk of failing to look beyond them. Technically, it does an excellent job of tracing a phenomenon from its technological origins, machine learning algorithms, to its social implications, passive attraction to hand-wavy feelings. By the end, I felt resolved to move more intentionally in my daily life and pay attention to the details. Good writing feels like it should change you somehow, and this definitely did it for me. Lila Schroff. Hi, I'm Lila. I'm a writer and a rising junior at Stanford. Currently, I'm working on responsible AI governance efforts as a policy fellow at Credo AI. At Stanford, I am an inaugural member of the Technology Ethics and Policy Fellowship. And this past year, I co-led a student group at the Human-Centered AI Institute, exploring AI and the future of creative expression. I love fiction writing and am currently working on a short story about memory, aging and art. I can't wait to cover all things arts, media and policy. I am very open and eager for pitches. Think artists, exploring technology in provocative ways, media creation tools you wish existed, and fiction that changes the way you think about technology. I love Fahini Zvara's award-winning essay, Ghosts, an early attempt experimenting with AI in creative writing, and her debut novel, The Immortal King, Rue, a 2023 Pulitzer Prize finalist, which charts a gripping parallel history of technology. What I appreciate about Vara's work is that she is both an incredible fiction writer and a tech journalist, and she uses her skills in each of these domains to inform her work in the other. I can't wait for her forthcoming essay collection, Searches, a collection of personal and cultural essays that explore the rapidly changing ways we express ourselves online, the future of language in the age of AI, and how late-stage techno-capitalists profit from it all. Tianu Fang. Hi, I'm Tian. I'm a writer, researcher, and technologist. Previously, I was part of Cheong Trap, a newsletter about life on the Chinese internet. Currently, I'm studying political science at Stanford University. I'm broadly curious about online culture, tech history, and technocratic ideologies. At Reboot, I'm excited to cover global implications and transnational productions of technology. If you have an idea, even if it's just a sentence or two, please reach out. The history of technology teaches us two lessons. First, what now seems novel isn't really new. And second, what we take for granted now was never an inevitable outcome. From this perspective, I enjoyed Ben Tarnoff's Internet for the People, a highly readable and critical assessment of the advent of the web, one that made me curious about the alternative internets we'd be living on had different policy choices been made. And two, reintroductions. I'm a PhD student in computer science at UC Berkeley. I work broadly on the societal implications of machine learning and artificial intelligence. With Jasmine, I co-founded Reboot back in 2020. Since then, I've been in a variety of roles, including newsletter editor, kernel managing editor, and editor-in-chief, and try to properly pay taxes to the state of California's person. I really enjoy good fruit and the performing arts. And that lady's name was Jessica Dye. Jessica goes on to say, pitch me after September about anything, some more specifics. I'm always curious about how the cultures and social dynamics of intellectual communities shape the substance of the work that gets produced. Personal essay narrative, especially braided with reflecting on work you've done in the past. I'd especially encourage academics, students or otherwise, to think about research, informed opinion pieces with general audience relevance. All those hot takes you can't put in something peer-reviewed. Things I enjoy but know less about. Beauty, aesthetics, fashion, food, identity. It probably means something that more than 5 years later, the first title that comes to mind is It Was Raining in the Data Center by Everest Pipkin. It was summer 2018, when Medium was still the place for new exciting essays. I was 19, bored to tears at my first tech job. I remember being blown away by the possibility of understanding the internet, which I mostly thought of as amorphous and intangible, as connected to real, physical systems with material stakes. Reading this was the first time I really understood what the project of creative and critical non-fiction writing was about. The first time I really felt like there might yet still be something interesting in technology. And finally, Jasmine's son. Hi, I'm a co-founder and co-editor-in-chief of Reboot. I'm currently most excited about designing better social and information ecosystems, which I work on in my day job as a product manager at Substack. In the past, I've held roles across the civic innovation ecosystem, tech policy research at Schmidt Futures, disaster resilience products at One Concern, public interest tech curricula at Stanford, and sustainability advocacy at the ICDI. I graduated from Stanford with a degree in sociology, and I'm happily based in San Francisco. I'm most interested in publishing profiles, personal essays, and interviews related to theories of change, the people, movements, products, and policies attempting to make tech meaningfully better. I believe it requires far more rigour and courage to defend something than to critique it, and I'm excited to hear from anyone who's up for the challenge. A book that stayed with me is sociologist and computer scientist Zeynep Tufekci, Twitter and Tear Gas. She applies a UX designer's meticulous eye to show how platform affordances shaped 21st century activism from Hong Kong to Jessie Park, sharing generalizable takeaways that are valuable for organizers and tech builders alike. I also discuss my other favorite pieces of tech writing in this essay. And there's a link to that essay. Doesn't say the title, but I will be looking myself afterwards. There's a link to the essay in the article and on the website. These are the eight voices you'll be hearing from in the newsletter at Reboot and shaping its vision over the next year. I can't wait to see what everyone comes up with. Please share or sign up if you're excited as I am. A closing note from Reboot. I want to extend one more thank you to Reboot's prior core team, Emily Liu, Matthew Sun, Ivan Zhao, Jake Gowan and Lucas Galfond, in their work on launching and running the Student Fellowship, Kernel Magazine and more. This group has contributed countless hours and incredible ingenuity to make Reboot the organisation it is today. In other news, are you a human illustrator with experience creating small digital portraits? We are looking to hire someone to create signature avatars for our editorial team. Please reply or contact me if you have leads. And there are contact details, as usual, in the article and on the website. Onwards and upward, Jasmine and the Reboot team. And that's the end of our coverage of our three non-profits this week. There will be three next week, and then the final episode, we will cover two. So, I hope that enough there, lots of videos for you to watch, as well as reports for you to look up and books in their archive section and research papers. Between all three, I think you've got a wide range of interesting topics to pursue over the coming months to find out how well these organisations are doing behind the scenes. As usual, I will speak to you all on Sunday night and the following week. So it's bye from me. Bye from Ivy. Bye.